I've got a good program this evening, and my first guest is coming up very shortly. She's going to be with me, and we're going to be talking about, and this is really very interesting, and I'm not surprised. I'll just get a bit of, to have a bit of a quick swig of water, but I'm not surprised, and this is, I'm going to be talking about the widening gap for disabled people in terms of, there's an urgent need to, employment, in terms of employment, and it is a widening gap, and so very soon I'm going to be talking to Dr. Huhana Hickey, and Dr. Huhana Hickey joins me now because, you know, we really need to talk about this because it's absolutely quite alarming, the widening gap in terms for disabled people in terms of employment. Kia ora, tēnā koe, Dr. Huhana. Nice to have you with us this evening on Radio Wātea.
Tēnā koe. Lovely to be here. And yes, you're absolutely spot on about keeping ourselves safe and looking after each other.
Well, that's right. That's right. And actually, we should actually be doing that too for disabled people, because this is really concerning. This report that's come out, and that really does suggest that there's an urgent need to address this widening gap for disabled people in terms of employment. My goodness, I see we're in 2021, 36.4. Mm-hmm. That was the gap, and now a couple of years later, 42.3 percent. Quite a significant increase, and it must be concerning.
Well, we're used to it. I mean, it started improving for a time, and we were getting, you know, there are now more disabled with more skills and qualifications getting into employment. However, there's still the old attitude that exists that still stops us. People don't see or value us as people. They don't see what we're good at. I mean, I'm a qualified lawyer. I'm a human rights lawyer. I've done UN work all around, all sorts. I'm speaking to the UK tomorrow around eugenics in the Pacific. And my area is specialised, but I can't get regular work. No one wants to employ me. Hey, you know, so we find our own. You'll find that there's a very high number of disabled entrepreneurs that exist in the community, and they exist because they can't get regular employment. As, you know, discrimination is rampant for disabled around employment. Employers don't want us. They consider us to be too costly. They think we're a burden. They think that they have to accommodate and make differences and changes, which to a point they do, but in return they get the very loyal employee that is so desperate to work and so wants to work that what we'll do is we'll work twice as hard and therefore often more productive than many non-disabled. But they don't see that. They see the problem, not the solution.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, what you're highlighting there is actually discrimination in the workplace. Mm. Well, not even in the workplace. Getting into the workplace is where the significant discrimination is.
Yes. And that comes back to, I remember quite a few decades ago when I was still at law school, and what was happening at that time is the Occupational Safety and Health Act. And what that did is it required employers to take responsibility for accidents in the workplace, which we need them to do. But they interpreted that it meant that they had to do all sorts of things to prevent disabled having accidents. And so they resisted in employing us. And I remember speaking with a guy from the Business Roundtable at the time, and he said to me, "We won't employ you. You're far too risky for us." And I asked why. He said, "Well, prisoners are more desirable because they don't require so many accommodations. Disabled people do, and we feel that the burden is on us and not the state to ensure that accommodations are made." And that was where the problem was. They also misinterpreted the Act a little bit because there's certain funding, there's resources, and there's support out there to get us into employment, but employers don't look at that. They see the burden, not the benefit.
Yeah, and that's really that's such a shame, as you say, because you know, everybody has, there is a human right to be able to work and provide for your families.
Yeah.
And, you know, but what about the Ministry for of Disabled People? Because to be honest, Huhana, I don't see them actually, well, I mean, no. You might know if they're doing it, but I just think they seem to be conspicuous by their bloody silence and their absence, or am I being rather harsh?
No, they're a new ministry, but they've also been hamstrung by the government and who tell them what they can and can't do. And the problem you've got there is that we haven't got the autonomy we asked for. We've now got providers and some parents taking over. disabled haven't been, I was part of the partnership board initially, but we've been pushed out by non-disabled who have been taking over the jobs. I mean, they just employed a long-term public servant, good on them, who's not disabled, into the role of chief advisor to the CEO. I mean, how are we ever going to get employment if non-disabled keep taking away the jobs, even ones designed for us? And we had a big fight to get a disabled person to be the chief executive because we had non-disabled arguing why. Why should disabled take that job? What about well-qualified non-disabled? The whole point, it's a bit like asking Jerry Brownlee when they took over the job from, I think it was Heke Aparata, no, Georgina Te Huhu, at the time when she was the Minister for Ministry of Māori Affairs, or Te Puni Kokiri, they sacked her and gave the job to Jerry. You know, it's like putting a man in charge of the Ministry of Women, or putting Pākehā in charge of Māori or Pacific Affairs. It's constant. They don't see the value of having the people that the ministry is for to actually be there.
Yeah. And that to me is really outdated thinking. And really, there's no substitute for somebody who actually is living daily with a disability, who knows the realities and has known that for such a long time, is pretty clear on what needs to be done, and actually will do the fearless advocating to get the bloody things done. So it's really such a shame to hear that, Huhana, that that's happened.
I'm at an age now, I'm 61. I'm at an age where I thought, you know, I used to dream that we would see change. I'm at an age where I'm like, well, I don't think I'm going to see it in my lifetime. But I want our rangatahi to feel the sense that they can make a difference. Each generation, something happens and changes. But in my generation, I now no longer think I will see the changes we need in my lifetime. And I had hoped that differently than 20 years ago when I started out. It was, you know, I just never thought I'd ever lose faith, but I have.
Well, I mean, and you know, I can understand that, because when you see the widening of the gap from 2021 to 2023, then somehow, some positive action isn't being taken to ensure that people with a disability can get into work, meaningful work as well, so that they can be independent and provide for their families and provide for themselves as well, and dignity that comes. That's right.
Because, you know, I had learning disabled once. She was very proud. She got a job in a rest home working in the laundry. Fantastic. I said, how much are you getting paid? Oh, I get a free lunch. I said, but that's not a pay. Oh, please don't tell them it's my first real job. Yeah. And that poor, beautiful wahine thought that she would lose her job if she asked for money, asked to be paid to do the work that they would pay a non-disabled person to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. And some parents actually support their children getting 50 cents to $2 an hour in the sheltered employment that exists out there. That's illegal labour. That is breach of the ILO, which New Zealand has an exemption for disabled people. Mm-hmm. And we've got a lot of things that we need to change, but we don't seem to have people in Parliament that want to make those changes.
Yes, yes. And so I appreciate that the ministry is about a couple of years old now. Is it 2 or 3 years? Or
1 year.
Oh, is it just 1 year? Oh,
just
my God.
1 year, yeah.
My goodness, how the time flies.
They only gave them 6 months to set up. It's not long enough to set up a ministry, not of one of such importance. But they didn't give us enough time. But there's been resistance by ministers for decades to have a ministry and to even have legislation. The thing that concerns me, it's not, I mean, I can't speak for all disabled, and I don't, but, you know, for Māori disabled, we certainly see a lot worse examples of things than what, you know, than what's out there for mainstream disabled. Māori have a higher rate of disability, many in labouring. By the time they reach the age of 40, 69% of our people are disabled in some way. Now, at the age of 40, that's when they've got their whānau, they've got the rent or the mortgage, they've got everything going for them, and their body is breaking down. And if 69% of our people are disabled by that age, we need something to change the outcome there. And we're not going to see it with any ministry. We're not going to see it unless we take charge ourselves.
So when we look at these statistics, when you look at the increase in the gap, and this is for in terms of employment, Huhana, then I would suggest perhaps, and you could correct me here, but you could probably see that in terms of health outcomes, in terms of other areas, education as well, because if it's, you know, I mean, so really the long-term prognosis for people with a disability to live a full life, to reach their potential, or even if it's halfway there to their potential, is severely curtailed.
Yes, it is very much so. I mean, there's also an awful lot of control by agencies and providers, particularly in the Māori sector around disability. There's a real belief that we can't speak for ourselves. They honestly believe that Māori providers are the only ones that should speak for Māori disabled. Now, we've got the Waitangi Tribunal claims at the moment being heard, and we're hearing about disabled in phase two of the Treaty Health claims, and you might get quite horrified at some of the attitudes that exist out there, but they do, and we're used to it, but our people are having their voice. And the week of the 25th of August is actually the hearing there at Papakura Marae. And I'm definitely speaking there, and there will be others there as well. But, you know, we've just got to, because we can't keep putting up with what's going on, because it's hurting our community. It's hurting Māori disabled.
Well, I did manage to hear some of the earlier submissions. Yes, I did. And you know, the people who were speaking to their submission, by goodness, they knew their stuff. They knew their stuff. And I think there is a widely held view that if you're disabled, and that doesn't mean, if you're in a wheelchair or if you're in a... I actually believe, from what they were saying, is that the view is that they must be mentally disabled. They must have a mental issue.
Well, I was born in 1962, and they told my birth mother that I was not going to survive, that I was born a month early. They had it down on my adoption papers that I was an imbecile and an idiot. And I went on to get my PhD in law and tikanga Māori. So, you know, there's a lot of assumptions made around disability that exist from those times. These days it's slightly different, but they've got their own things to deal with. And, you know, it's just ongoing. We are constantly having to prove our worth to live in this world. And society doesn't want us. So there's a huge resistance to engage with us and employ us. And that's something that has to change, but we don't expect to see that anytime soon, because we're used to this disparity.
Yeah. Look, Huhana, I presume you're a member of the Disabled Persons Assembly. How effective are they?
I know them well. I was on the executive, but I had an issue around Te Tiriti o Waipangi, and I argued why they were sending non-Māori wahine, but no Māori wahine, to any of the UN meetings around CEDAW. I questioned around the role of Māori within the membership. It's changed. They've now got a new DPA executive, and that's Mojo, and I have full faith and confidence we're going to be re-engaging, because she really wants to bring the treaty in, and she wants to transform DPA to be more relevant under today's climate than what it was 20 years ago.
Oh, well, that's good. That's really good, because I would have thought that, you know, if anybody could stir things up, it should be the DPA.
It used to be.
Yes.
But again, it's like the DPO coalition that has been, you know, selected, they have actually denied Māori DPOs any entry into that DPO coalition. And that is the coalition that the government listened to. And we have got no one, no Māori organisation involved. And that's a huge concern when our own people are being denied the basics and the rights of being at the being part of the DPO coalition. That's a UN-required mandate, and we're not even at the table. That's a breach of Te Tiriti o Waipangi.
Well,
right
it
there,
certainly is.
And yet it's allowed.
Yes. Well, that certainly appears to be the case, yes. And so, because whenever you see the statistics, then you've got to say, has the dial moved? Has the dial shifted in the last 10 years? And if it hasn't, then people who are in positions to either make it happen or to advocate and stir the pot and do all of those things, and they're sitting in positions that one would expect them to do that, then they're either, I don't know whether they're either not doing it or they just don't have the courage to do what's necessary. Because people who have a disability rely on those who are in leadership positions to pick up the cause and run with it.
Well, it's so easy for many of our people to get into the yes mode around things just because they're finally at the table. Sometimes they get a bit too scared to speak out. The whole reason I'm not in any really official position sometimes is because I do speak out. I don't shut up a little bit too much, I think. But, you know, I'm aware of that. But if we don't have a voice, then where is our voice? And I'm not going to shut up when I'm watching our community struggle. And I've seen it. I've seen the poverty among our whānau with disabled whānau members. I've seen the ostracisation. I've seen how whānau treat whānau. And we've got to change. We have to understand what disability means and what it meant pre-colonially, because the Western view is not our view. It's entirely different. And we had a very positive view of our people. In fact, even the terminologies, even the TAPO terminologies, are all medicalised terms. That's not how we viewed disability. We viewed them as whānau first and foremost. And that's how I would love to see us get back. We were whānau hauwā. We were whānau members in the centre of whānau. And that's what's missing. Everything is individualised. We're not an individualised community.
No. And so I did hear you say a moment ago that providers purport to talk for the disabled community and just individuals, obviously, and Māori providers as well, which I think I'm surprised about that, because I'd like to think that Māori providers would always be aware that it is the voice of the disabled person that must be heard, and of course, as you're very capable of speaking up, and certainly I'm sure many in the disabled community are themselves. So they need to be given that opportunity.
Well, under the treaty claims, my lawyer and I have been working on them. We've seen the evidence in the affidavits, and there's been a great resistance by some providers, particularly Māori, that really have an issue with us having a voice. And that's just the reality. And I think it comes back to that, you know, the desire to care for our people, the looking after each other. But we've grown up, and disabled are not children. And we are quite capable of having our own voice sitting there.
Yeah, absolutely. And also to take that, even extrapolate that a bit further, you're quite capable of having somebody from the disabled people's community actually moving into those significant roles in management as, you know, GMs and CEOs and all of those areas now. Look at yourself. You've got all your degrees. You're well traveled. I mean, you know, you write submissions. You do all of that. And so, you know, To me, it just seems so odd and out of touch today that they would bring somebody in who isn't disabled to sit in senior positions that could influence the well-being of disabled people merely because they're not disabled and they're sitting in those roles, which, of course, Huhana could go to somebody who is disabled, who's got the lived experience, and actually would relish the opportunity to show what they could do.
Well, they would. I mean, there's so many just want to be a part of society, just want to be part of the whānau. I mean, what we're seeing, there are some good things happening. If you look at Kapahaka, you look at the, you know, at the annual events and stuff, you see the beauty of disabled Māori actually taking part, participating now. That didn't happen a while ago. That didn't happen 20 years ago, 10 years ago, but now we're seeing it. It's changing. But our people need to learn to understand, because there was a lot that happened while missionaries were treating us for diseases. They were also giving us the Bible and the missionary statements. And, of course, under the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 21, where it states we carry the many sins of our ancestors, where we have a makutu or a hara, was actually quite a common belief system that was adapted from the missionaries teaching us while they were medicalising, treating us for different conditions. So, you know, it's understandable that it got very confusing. Our people were too busy trying to survive. But there has to come a point when we say, come on, you know, we need to take charge ourselves and we need to take control of what it is that we are trying to achieve here.
Now, because these have just been released and it must be concerning to the government, who will pick up the mahi that needs to be done or say, let's have a look and see, okay, there's been this widening gap in the last couple of years and it is significant. It will have adverse effects, obviously, on access to labor, to the labor force by the disability community. So yeah. Who will be picking it up and saying to the government, now there needs to be something done? Is that the disabled person's, disabled people's assembly? Is it the individual disabled person themselves? Is it the ministry? Or because all otherwise it could just fall flat.
Well, I know that Faikaha is trying to do a policy around employment and stuff, but again, they've got no power. It is simply, it was given to us in a tokenistic way. We were given, because I did the hekoi 2 years ago, and the hekoi was what actually triggered getting a new ministry. They gave us 6 months and they've underfunded it. So what they're finding is we've got a ministry that's not being properly funded for disabled people to really be able to make these differences. We rely on others. So I'm part of the Māori Women's Welfare League. We have Te Hukinga Mai, which is the first Māori disabled women's network within there. We've already made changes within the league so that during COVID, what happened was they were able to go online and have meetings because we'd already proved it constitutionally for our rupu. And so that made a change. Others are doing things. DPA has got Mojo on board. She's only just come on board, but she has indicated to me that she's very keen to make changes. And she's been a politician. She knows what that world's like. I do believe DPA is going to come back and be strong again, which it needs to be. And we've got individuals. We've got Professor... Oh, that's my Siri. We've got Professor Tristram Ingham and his wife Bernadette Ingham, who are researchers who also work at Otago Uni, who are making some real inroads into te ao Māori and disability, and have done several pieces there. One of the problems we do have is the Ministry of Health does not collect data on disabled people. And so it hasn't collected data on how many disabled Māori have died from or with COVID. And that can be quite significant. We need to know those figures. They're refusing to collect that kind of data. So if they're not collecting it on that, are they collecting anything on employment? Are they collecting the data properly? What's going on? And so that is part of the problem, is that they don't value us enough to view us as members of society worthy of policy and procedures the same as everybody else.
And I'll tell you, Huhana, we won't even go there. We won't even go into the area of housing because goodness knows would throw up.
Tell me about it. I mean, you know, I tried, guys. I really did try. And because of that, I got punished and didn't get placed onto the board again. So. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we can try, but they punish us when we do something they don't like.
Well, I think the great thing is, Huhana, is that you're still there in your various roles, highlighting the issues for disabled people. But when I saw this gap, this widening gap in terms of employment for disabled people, it really is very concerning. An urgent need, there must be something done to address that as soon as possible. Look, Huhana, thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening. Again, your voice is so necessary in that arena. Just making sure that your voice is heard. I know it's a strident one. I have seen you in action. Huhana, but look, if it wasn't you, there might not be a voice at all. So thank you so much for the mahi that you do for the disabled community.